Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files and listen on your phone or personal computer. And when you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com. Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. In uncertain times, you need gear you can count on. That's why I teamed up with Daniel Vitalis to launch SupplySource.com. It's a new online retailer offering extremely durable gear for emergency preparedness and long-term survival. Everything we offer survives my daily use test on a ranch in Texas, plus Daniel's outdoor endurance test in the rugged wilderness of Maine. Most of the stuff we test ends up in a pile of trash because it breaks. The stuff that doesn't break, we stock it on SupplySource.com. To get the site started, we've launched it with a line of rugged, reliable, waterproof LED flashlights, now chosen by military and law enforcement everywhere. And we'll soon be adding a whole new brand of emergency water filters, family defense gear, and urban survival tools. When you want your gear to really work, get it from SupplySource.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to Survival and Beyond. I'm your host, Ed Corcoran, coming at you from the heart of the wilderness, from the edge of what most people would call reality. We're coming to you from the Natural News Radio Network, as well as the Prepper Podcast Radio Network. And now, recently, we've started going out to the Free America Now Network, and I'm awful happy to be talking to those folks out there, the patriots, survivalists, preppers, all over the place. And boy, howdy, I gotta tell you, it's been busy. I've been busy as a one-armed paper hanger, as the old saying goes. Ever since I decided to focus all of my time on my show and on my website, I've got to wear every hat, you know, and do a lot of stuff that I don't know a whole lot about or didn't know a whole lot about. A big learning curve, having to learn things like SEO and all the technical stuff about, you know, really making the website as just making it as good as it can possibly be, making the experience you know, seamless and flawless and all that good stuff for my readers and visitors. And boy, I'll tell you what, traffic has been blowing up. And I have all you people to thank for that. Thanks for coming to the website. Thanks for telling your friends about the website. And especially thanks to all my friends in the survival and preparedness community who have their own websites and their own followings. You know, folks like the Survival Mom and Prepper Podcast, John Melandrid, Jim Cobb, you know, all of our the survival professionals out there who have really helped out a lot by driving traffic to my website. Big hats off to you guys. I really appreciate it. Too many of you to mention. You all know who you are, and thanks. That's you know, I'm really gratified by how unexpectedly that, you know, things have taken off with the website and also with the show. Our listener base has been growing by leaps and bounds, to turn a corny phrase. And yeah, you know, you folks are just, you're what's keeping me going. You're what's keeping me going and what's keeping me doing this thing, getting that information out to you folks and hopefully waking up some minds and freeing some minds out there. But anyway, as far as everything else goes, here around the old Corcoran abode, the cabin out here, my neighbor, he asked me to take care of his cat while he was away for about a week and a half. And, you know, it's always an honor and it's a blessing to be asked to take care of somebody's pet, somebody's animal, you know, a creature that they love. That's a sign of trust. And since I'm kind of new out here, you know, I've only been living out here since last fall, you know, and I don't really interact with a lot of people too much, but this neighbor I do. And yeah, and so it's great, you know, go over there and I like cats. I've always had cats. My last cat was the greatest little pal. In fact, his name was Pally. And my late trend is to start talking about pets. Last week it was hamsters and now it's Pally. But boy, that cat was great. He chose me. I was living out in the desert, and I mean desert, you know, out Highway 89A in Arizona, pretty close to the Utah border, and Vermilion Cliffs area, and it was beautiful out there. And I had a friend, coworker, and he would come over to my house, you know, every now and then, and he had this cat, and this cat would follow him, and his name was Pally, and so. He would come over and hang out for a little while, you know, the six pack of beer or something, and, you know, and would, you know, shoot the breeze, as it were, for a while. And then, they'd go home and Pally would go home with him. But, you know, one day, Brian came over with his cat and the cat never left. And he stayed at my house for a few days. And the next time I saw him, I was like, man, you got to come by and get your cat sometime. And he goes, oh no, man, he's your cat now. Apparently he got saddled with the cat. It belonged to his sister, and she got sick of living in the desert and moved out and left the cat behind. And so now I got Pally. But boy, you know, he was a desert cat, and I don't even think he even knew he was a cat. I don't think he'd ever seen another cat before in his life. And he was an outdoor cat, and he would be always running around outside and everything. He would go camping with me, and he'd follow me everywhere I went. It was like having a dog. You know, and whenever I'd go to somebody's house, there weren't too many people living out there, but I had a few friends within walking distance, and he would be right up behind me and come knock on your door, be me and the cat, you know, and he'd go camping with me, sleep in my sleeping bag. He would go camping with me in the wintertime. And yeah, it does get cold in the desert in the wintertime. Anybody who's out there can tell you. Yeah, it's not 110 degrees all the time, especially in the winter. So anyway, yeah, that was a little trip down memory lane for me. Reminded me of you know, taking care of my neighbor's cat. Was reminding me of Pally, and I sure miss that little guy. But hey, speaking of nostalgia, you know, I was thinking today, and this is I'm going to get a little philosophical here, if you'll indulge me. Yeah, I was thinking about nostalgia and the phenomenon of nostalgia, where, you know, like starting like, and it's a fairly recent phenomenon. Starting back in the 70s, you know, there would be like these nostalgia crazes that would come up. Like in the 70s, people were nostalgic for the 50s, And in the '80s, people were nostalgic for the '60s, and in the '90s, they were nostalgic for the '80s. I guess that's when that, you know, I love the '80s and that show and everything. I hated the '80s. Well, actually, I didn't completely hate the '80s, but anyway, you know, Frank Zappa had a theory, and he said that Americans are obsessed with nostalgia, and at least, you know, in the latter part of the 20th century. You know, like, you didn't see people in, like, 1914 getting nostalgic about 1902, you know, or that decade. And Frank Zappa said that eventually it's going to reach a state of entropy, and where the periods between, you know, the time frame between, you know, the present and the time that you're being nostalgic for is going to narrow. It's going to get smaller and smaller until you reach a state of entropy. And people are nostalgic for, like, you know, last week. and it also started making me think, you know, old timers, you hear the old timers say, things aren't the way they used to be, and things were better back in the day. And, you know, well, maybe they don't say back in the day, but you know what I mean? You know, and you know what? They're right. Now, that's not nostalgia. That's just observation. You know, look around you today, you know. I'm only 43 years old. I don't really, you know, I don't consider myself an old timer by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, they were right. The old timers were right. It was better back in the day. They weren't just being cranky, you know. They weren't just being cantankerous. It really was better back in the day, and just as now, you know. And I think as time progresses, right, that gap is narrowing, and it's not nostalgia, but that gap, you know, between, like, you know, I pine for the days before 9/11, you know, I pine for 2000, 1999, only because things have changed so dramatically, and nobody's really noticing it, you know, because most of the people are asleep. That's why they're not noticing it. And, you know, and people are distracted. They're asleep and distracted. And, I mean, everything since 9/11 has been disastrous. You know, people said back right after right after 9/11, people used to say that, you know, this country is going to change considerably. This isn't going to be the same country anymore. It's never going to be, you know. And I don't think I really understood what they meant by that. You know, I certainly didn't expect America to turn into a tyrannical fascist surveillance state, you know, where Americans can be detained indefinitely for no reason whatsoever, where we have drones, we have drones flying in American airspace, where, you know, everybody is considered a terrorist, you know. This is just, and I can go on and on and on, and I'm sure a lot of you listeners, you know where I'm coming from, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And yeah, it's just, I'm flabbergasted to whenever I think about it, you know. And the sad part is like, I could very likely, you know, be among the sleeping sheeple, you know, if it weren't for certain events in my life, and the path that I took, and you know, and the way my life turned out in the previous years and the years leading up to now. You know, I could have just as well been, I could still be out in the wilderness somewhere, you know, in my self-imposed semi-hermitage, and be blissfully unaware. But, you know, ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is ignorance. And I would rather be awake and aware right now and know what's going on than to be blissfully asleep. And in that department, there's one piece of news that I wanted to bring up during this broadcast. Let me see if I can get it back up on my computer. This latest little piece of fascist news from Obama. I don't even have anything clever or witty to say. But apparently he's going to grant amnesty to about 800,000 illegal immigrants. 800,000 illegal immigrants, if they were brought to this country before the age of 16, I believe it is. Well, I'll read the piece. It's from the Associated Press. The Obama administration will stop deporting and begin granting work permits to younger illegal immigrants who came to the U.S. as children and have since led law-abiding lives. The election year initiative addresses a top priority of an influential Latino electorate that has been vocal in its opposition to administration deportation policies. There's the crux of the biscuit, people. This is all about the upcoming election. And not only that, you know, basically he's creating 800,000 new American citizens, or if not American citizens, at least resident aliens, who will be so grateful to the Democratic Party and to Obama for blessing them with this amnesty, allowing them to stay in the United States, that he's just creating a wellspring of voters. And yeah, I know, technically, you know, illegal immigrants or resident aliens are not allowed to vote in United States elections, but does it matter? Does it matter? Nobody's checking ID. Most states aren't checking IDs at the polling booths, you know, and it would be very easy for him to stuff the ballot box with all these very appreciative and grateful newly minted resident aliens. The policy charge described to the Associated Press by two senior administration officials will affect as many as 800,000 immigrants who have lived in fear of deportation. Under the administration plan, illegal immigrants will be immune from deportation if they were brought to the United States before they turn 16 and are younger than 30. Have been great demographic right there. You know, they're all going to be voting age, most of them. Have been in the country for at least 5 continuous years. Oh, well, yeah, they'll definitely be a voting age then if they came here before they turned 16 and they've been here for 5 years. Well, unless they came here when they were 3 or something. But for 5 continuous years, have no criminal history, graduated from a U.S. high school, and earned a GED. Ah, all right. Definitely then they're going to be voter age. Yeah, I did read this article before, but this little stipulation escaped me. They earned a U.S. high school diploma or GED or served in the military. They also can apply for a work permit that will be good for 2 years with no limits on how many times it can be renewed. Well, isn't that awesome? Basically, he's just giving them carte blanche, you know, saying, here, you can just stay here permanently, you know. And do you know how grateful they're going to be? They're going to be so grateful that guess who they're going to vote for? A lot of them will probably be so grateful that they'll vote anyway, knowing that it's, you know, or they'll be persuaded to. I wouldn't doubt that. Now, opponents of the new policy argue that the move will not only add pressure to an already struggling economy. There's the other thing. Yeah, we don't have enough jobs to go around as it is. So let's bring in 800,000 more people and give them work permits. That's great. That's awesome. I'm sure the American unemployed are very happy for these folks and their new gift of amnesty. Education and healthcare systems will likely strengthen Obama's position in the upcoming presidential election by adding hundreds of thousands of new voters sentimental to Democratic candidates. While it is illegal to vote in a presidential election unless you are a U.S. citizen, the only thing a would-be voter needs to cast a ballot is proof of residency. In most states, not even that is required, which is easily obtainable once immunity or legal status is granted. And this piece comes from shtfplan.com, and if you want to go to their site and check out the story, this is... It's how do people not see through this? How are people not seeing this stuff? You know, that's what I want to know. You know, how at this point now it's happening faster and faster. And getting back to my point about nostalgia and about how things, you know, used to be better and the periods are getting shorter and shorter. Yeah, eventually what Frank Zappa said is going to come true. Eventually we're all going to be nostalgic. We're all going to be talking about how much better things were last year than they are today. Not 10 years ago or 20 or 50 years ago. People are going to be talking about, geez, I remember 6 months ago that, you know, that's what it's going to be like. This is how fast things are happening. One thing after another. Every time I turn around, I see something that horrifies me perpetrated by our fascist, and I know I keep saying the word fascist, I'm probably overusing it, but the corporate oligarchy, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it. This is insane. This is insanity. And, you know, people, thankfully, it's fortunate, and, well, fortunate is probably the wrong word. It's, you know, I'm gratified to see that a lot more people are waking up, and a lot more people are spreading the word, and a lot more people are starting to question. A lot, you know, that they don't really need too much convincing anymore. You don't really have to beat people over the head with this stuff. It's no longer conspiracy theory when you can see your government is doing it in plain sight. They're doing it right in front of you. Hey, we got drones now. Hey, you don't like it? What are you going to do? Go watch the new frickin' Twilight movie. Go, play your Wii for 5 hours tonight. Forget about it. It's all right. It'll be all cool. Yeah. But I'm not going to go on too much of a rant this week because we've got a great guest. Michael Jordan is with us on the show, and he is not a basketball player. He's actually an expert beekeeper and a survival expert. He teaches survivalism, and Mike's a great guy. I've known Mike for a while through the magazine and through our communications on, you know, from the Facebook page and everything like that. And way back early on, he submitted an article for the magazine about beekeeping. And you know, when I first heard about it, when he first told me about it, I was like, oh yeah, well, I'm a beekeeper, and you know, like maybe you'd like to use this in your publish this in your magazine. And I have to say, I thought, well, what does beekeeping really have to do with survivalism? But you know, it didn't take me too long to realize and, you know, kind of come back down to self-reliance aspect of it, is that bees provide us with so much. The honey is, not only is it nutritious, not only does it have all kinds of nutrients in it, but it's also medicine. It's a natural antibiotic. It's great for treating burns and for treating insect bites and just all kinds of uses, plus the wax. There are so many things that we can make from the wax. And so, yeah, and he sent me this very long and very detailed article, and I thought it was great. I thought it was a great idea, and it was something I really wanted to get out to our readers. And unfortunately, that article did not make it into the magazine, but he wrote another article which did. And so, you know, we've been in communication. He teaches survival skills out there in Wyoming, where he lives, and he's just an all-around nice guy. And we had a really great conversation, and it went over the allotted time of, 1 hour. And, you know, I used to think, I used to feel constrained when my show was only an hour long. And I always felt like, oh, I gotta do a longer show. You know, my old show, Survivalist Radio, that was a 90-minute show, and they wanted me to do a 2-hour show on the network because of, you know, just the scheduling and all that. You know, everybody else does, you know, a nice round, even 1-hour or 2-hour show. So anyway, so I'm doing a 2-hour show now, and I still feel constrained sometimes. I still feel, you know, I have great guests. I've been blessed to have a lot of great guests on my show so far since we started. Only been doing the show for about 3 months now, and it's really a lot of people seem to be digging it. We're getting a lot of listeners, and that number keeps increasing every month when I get my metrics and everything. So it's really cool. But anyway, back to Michael. You know, he's just a really great guy. So we had a long talk about a lot of different things. We had to talk about the GMO situation. You know, with all the bees that are dying off in the world, they started noticing this a few years ago, that the bee population is decreasing. And I remember back in the 70s when I was a kid, people were talking about the Africanized killer bees. They were going to swarm all over the world and cause all kinds of havoc. But yeah, they're saying that the bee population is dying off, and they've linked it to, oddly enough, obviously enough, GMOs, GMO plants. with the pesticides firstly are killing off the bees, and secondly the GMO corn that produces BT toxin, it produces its own toxin, so when bugs and insects come to feed on the plant, their stomachs will blow up. And they assure us, as with everything else, that's perfectly safe for humans. We're eating corn and tomatoes and other God knows what that's actually full of its own naturally produced poison. Right? Does this not alarm you? This scares the hell out of me. And they're saying, oh no, the poison is going to be destroyed in the stomach acid and blah 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 and everything. Yet people it's been discovered that pregnant women have been discovered with BT toxin in their bloodstream. Their fetuses they found BT toxin in. So this is an awful thing. We're going to get into this in the interview, but right now we're going to take a quick break and we're going to hear a message from our friends at Camping Survival. So hang tight.
Survival is not about the end of the world. It's not about a hypothetical plane crash or the latest violent storm. Survival is about the satisfaction of knowing you can take care of yourself and your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. CampingSurvival.com was started in 1956. No, not the .com part, the survival part. CampingSurvival.com has over 17,000 urban, wilderness, and preparedness items. Supreme customer service, very low shipping, and no games. We look around to make sure we have the lowest prices. And CampingSurvival.com is 100% USMC veteran-owned. Don't base your survival on the latest spring-up-on-the-internet company. Do business with an authority on survival. CampingSurvival.com. Confidence born on preparation.
Hey, and we're back. And today we have with us Michael Jordan. No, not the pro b-ball player, but the pro beekeeper. And he's also a survival expert teaching survival skills to the young and old alike out there in Wyoming. And he's here to talk to us about how important bees are for self-reliance and a survivalist lifestyle, and also how vital they are to the food chain and life on this planet. So, and we're also going to be talking about some other things that are threatening our existence, threatening the bees, the GMOs, and all these other nasty government things going on. So welcome to the show, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing really good, Ed. I'm just enjoying the good summer that's coming around.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that up here in the mountains up in New Hampshire. It's better than snow, I'll tell you that.
I enjoy the snow, but I enjoy the summer. I like watching my agricultural bloom and grow and watch my bees work. So I enjoy the summer as much as I do the ice fishing in the wintertime.
Right on. Well, you know, speaking of the bees, that's one of the things I wanted to get into. With our listeners, I'm sure that a lot of people are familiar with beekeeping, and you know, and as far as like a self-reliance skill, there's the obvious benefits of beekeeping. You know, the honey is one of the most obvious things that most people know about. But what are some of the other self-reliance applications to beekeeping, and why do you think this is an important endeavor?
Well, I got into beekeeping to make honey wine. My grandfather was a Gaelic Irishman, and he had a recipe that was over 200 years old, and I used it to make honey wine to give out as gifts and just have around the house, and that's how I started getting into beekeeping. And then I got bees and found out all the products that they do and the agricultural business that it is for the self-reliant person to have a little extra income on the side to make it in times of necessary need, as well as the products they give out. You know, honey is always beneficial for burns, food source, sugar. But bees make propolis, which is a glue that they use to seal the hives with. And you can use that glue for many things by heating it up and sticking tarps together to gluing, man, vast things. In some places of Texas, there's research centers that are using propolis and will buy propolis for you so they can do testicular and breast cancer research. So, you know, the glue that they make from tree sap is just incredible. It's better than Gorilla Glue.
Wow.
The beeswax that comes from everything is a smokeless wax for candles. Great for inside your home. I'm sure everybody's heard of Burt's Beeswax, you know, and the lip balms and lotions that you can make from it for home remedies to chap lips at your home, as well as the gifts that you can give out. You know, the one thing that really, really is awesome about bees that the government really hasn't got into is that most of the products are, you know, called food-grade products. They're non-taxable items. You can sell it anywhere. So it's a trade good for the honey, the pollen, the propolis, the royal jelly, things like that that the bees produce, you know, as an underground little bit of an economy, as well as home remedies at home. You know, it's a good little thing to have in your house, as well as cooking at home instead of getting corn sugar and cane sugar, which, you know, we both know corn sugar is just terrible for people as well as anybody else.
Oh, yeah.
The natural products from the sugar, instead of just using any kind of sugar, you know, you just let the honey glycerize a little bit and substitute a cup of it instead of a cup of corn sugar or, you know, powdered sugar or something like that for a sweetener. Because honey never goes bad.
Honey, right,
is one of those products that never goes bad. It's been found in ancient Egypt from Babylonian era, and they went through, stuck their finger in it, and ate it, and the honey was still good. And, you know, that's thousands of years old honey.
Right. Now everybody knows about the food value of honey and the sweetening, you know, as a sweetener and everything like that. But honey also has a lot of other applications. Like I didn't know for the longest time that honey is actually a natural antibiotic, and there are medical applications for it. You mentioned burns and, you know, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've been using honey for everything from many kinds of blisters, bee sting application, of course. But my son and I were cooking bacon one time. He's 4. He wanted to see what was in the pot, and the bacon grease spilled over, and I got him out of the way and burnt my hand. And I've never heard of a fifth-degree burn before. It actually cooked my hand to where the meat was cooked. You know, if you wanted to eat it, you could hate it.
You know,
burns are just ugly. They, you know, when you get burned, all the toxins and stuff from anything that's in it is cooked into your skin. And so I immediately put honey on it before I went to the doctor, and he says that was like the best application you could have ever did due to the fact of the hygienic nature of bees and what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pure nectar from flowers, and, you know, some nectars from flowers do a lot of things. You know, bees get nectar from thistle plants, and instead of using ambisol in your mouth, you take the honey from thistle plants and put it in your mouth, and it has a numbing agent in your mouth. So it has that numbing agent that, you know, you can use the honey. And when you make IVs, you know, you need sugar and you need salt. So if you melt down your honey and add it to the water and some salt, make it, you know, so it's not jelly, but, you know, a good clear liquid, you know, it can be used for IVs and has been used in applications and military aspects, as well as third world countries, as a, you know, antibiotic as well as an IV.
Mm-hmm.
So the applications from the nutrients in the nectar, from the enzymes from the bees, is very good. You can use it to... A guy told me that one time he uses it for athlete's foot, that he puts his feet in the jelly and stuff. He had the jungle rot from the Vietnam area and had trouble getting rid of it, and the antiseptic aspect of the cleanliness and keeping it away from the moisture of the sock and stuff helped him get rid of his jungle rot from an athlete's foot.
That's incredible. You know, and there's one thing that I've been reading over the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure that you're aware of this, is that you really have to be careful when it comes to buying honey at the store, if you're at the supermarket or at Walmart, because a lot of the honey, or a lot of the product that's being perpetrated as honey, isn't honey at all.
Well, it's sad. your local beekeepers that do natural honey and put it out on the market, farmers market, or sell it locally, it goes from the hive to the jar. Mm-hmm. It's not the heat process where it kills out the enzymes, kills out any kind of proteins or pollen or anything in there that's used for allergies. It goes right to the jar. It's perfect for your body. Now, honey sells for around $5 a pound to $10 a pound. And if you go to your store, you're like, well, that's not true. You know, I'm buying it for $1.75 a pound. And it'll say right at your store, pure honey. And what it is, though, due to the fact that honey is like bottled water, there's no FDA requirement for it or testing.
Mm-hmm.
It has corn sugar in it. It may have soy products in it. Most of the honey that's sold at those stores comes from places like China,
right,
and India, where they, you know, in order to, you know, if I got a gallon of honey and then I thin it out with some corn sugar, now I've got 4 gallons of honey. And since it's not tested or processed, you know, you go right down to your local grocery store, and I bought 13 pounds of honey, and you know, it was only like $1.75 a pound, and you're not getting pure, raw, natural honey from those places. And it also, that affects your local beekeeper's market for honey, because I can't compete with a store-bought honey where you're getting it for, you know, $1.75 a pound. You know, the guy's thinning it out with corn sugar, and the corn sugar is probably made from some Monsanto brand. It's probably not even human consumable.
Right.
In some third world country, and I can't compete with that, so it makes it harder for me to supplement what it costs for me to do beekeeping, as well as getting the product out that's pure and natural for people to eat. So, yeah, you can go to your grocery store, you want to buy the honey that you want, and I just rather wish that people would spend most of their time and you go to your local farmer's market or get on, you know, you can call your agri department in your state and say, hey, I'm looking for local beekeepers in my area, and support your local beekeepers, because the money that they use is locally, and you get the local pollen, it helps reduce allergies by almost a third of what you take. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, going to the store and getting honey from the store is just awful. It's terrible.
Yeah, and I'm a big proponent of honey, and I think an important factor is education and you know, getting people aware of this, because they do think that, you know, it does say pure honey, and you look at the label, you look at the ingredients, and it says honey, and so you think you're buying honey, and there's really no way of telling unless you buy locally made, manufactured. I don't even know if manufactured is the correct term, but from, like you were saying, from your local beekeepers, or at least, you know, make sure that it's an American product. It's not made in China or India, as you mentioned, because China ships this stuff out that they call honey. They ship this out by the drumful, and like you were saying, it's mostly, you know, high fructose corn syrup, and in some cases there's not even a drop of honey in it at all. It's just, you know, it's flavored. It tastes like honey, but it's, you know, it's artificial. So I think it's really,
there's no honey in some of those products at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know, at one time, and you know, there was no honeybees in America ever. Honeybees came from Europe to America because Europeans didn't have corn, and we didn't make corn sugar. We didn't come from the southern peninsula of South America where we had cane and cane sugar.
Right.
We brought honeybees over here to America for a sugar source, and everybody had the sugar source at one time for their house, and it was a pure energy sugar, and you're getting it from a store. You can tell the difference. Give your kid a tablespoon of raw honey and give your kid a tablespoon from that store-bought honey and see the down sluggish time of your child just from having ingesting of, you know, it's crap. It's not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can definitely taste the difference. I remember when I found out about this, you know, I thought I was eating pure honey all along, and then when I got hit to that and started buying the real deal, sure, it's more expensive and everything, but like you said, you're supporting local business, and also it just tastes so much better. I try, due to the antibiotic qualities of it and whatnot, I try to have at least a tablespoon of honey. Just put it on a spoon, put it in my mouth, you know, and just that's my medicine almost, you know, every day. And when I started, you know, seeking out the real stuff, the real honey and everything, it certainly is a noticeable difference in taste. And I know it's a difference in how it acts or reacts in your body.
No, totally. Like, you know, people can go to their doctor, go to their allergist, and blatantly just ask your allergist, you know, I've heard that honey reduces allergies. And you say, oh, yeah. If mm-hmm. you're getting local honey in your area, the pollen that's in the honey is what you're getting. So it's almost like snake venom, right? You get by a snake, they give you the snake venom for it. And that counteracts it. So if you're actually putting that pollen in your system, you're already building up an immunity to what's floating around in the air that you're not sneezing all the time or your eyes aren't always swollen shut and stuff like that, because, and your doctor will tell you that, you know, your allergist will tell you that. Just find your local beekeeper and get some raw honey. You know it's going to help you.
Now this might be a dumb question, but do people who are allergic to bee stings, do they have any kind of negative reaction to eating honey?
Man, you know, that's like one of the famous things that I hear from everybody is that I'm allergic to bee stings. I'm going to let you know, everybody in the world is allergic to bee stings.
Right.
The amount of venom and the allergic reaction you get can be fatal to some, but some people swell up. You know, it's a venom. You know, I hate when people say poison because there's no such thing as a poisonous snake. There's venomous snakes.
Right, right.
Bees have a venom. And, you know, it's people use that venom for multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, and arthritis research by going to people to get stung. Now, the honey itself, if you're allergic to bees, has no effect unless you're allergic to some of the products that the bees get into. And bees have been used as a weapon in over in Greece and stuff back in the Roman era. You know, they used to let their bees go into certain fields to get some of that nectar, and then they would leave it out for their enemies to eat. It would give their enemies dysentery and very bad diarrhea, as well as vomiting and stuff because of the toxin that came from the plant. Not
right.
The venom from the bee. It's the nectar source. It's just like I said, if you have ambisol at your house, it numbs your mouth. Well, you know, you go get some good Canadian thistle honey and rub it in your mouth. You know, thistle has a neurotoxin in it. So you're going to get that directly into your mouth, and it's going to numb it. Is it going to kill you? That's a no. You have to ingest quite a bit of it. But, you know, it has to do with the allergic reaction of what you're allergic to. You know, I have had people tell me that they do break out when the bees get into some sorts of peanut and bean fields because of the allergic reaction they have to that type of bean or peanut allergy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as severe as eating straight peanut, but when you're allergic to the peanuts themselves, you know, you're going to get that nectar flow, and, you know, you will receive some reaction to it, but it's not from the bees themselves. It's the allergic reaction from the plants that they're getting it from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of using bees as a weapon, it's also commonly known the Romans used to put bees in a clay urns and clay pots, and they would lob them over the walls of their enemies, or they would leave them outside of the cities. And so when people would come along, and of course they'd take the lid off to see what's in the urn, and the bees would swarm all over the place. So that's...
Oh, yeah. Bees have been used for way more than that stuff. The weapon and warfare tactic of using bees in the early times was incredible. Over in Kenya and places of Vietnam, you know, they stretch beehives on rope around gardens and around their villages for elephant protection, and they call it the electric fence because the bees hum.
Mm-hmm.
And elephants never forget. Bees go directly for what they call the breathing apparatus on anybody, which is the eyes, ears, nose, and throat, which has caused swelling. And so, those elephants are pushed away from it because if they hear that sound and they know, oh, I get stung, I'm not going to be able to breathe, or my eyes swell shut. And, they're launching into somebody's compound or retreat or something for a distraction, it'd be a heck of a distraction for a while.
Yeah, Yeah. Now, as far as like getting back to the more practical aspects of beekeeping, what does it take to get in? You know, the entry level to start. I mean, you've written articles. I've read some of your great articles about building your own beehive. And you know, what are the requirements? Is there, you know, can you raise bees in the city? What are the costs involved? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I tell anybody, and I teach beekeeping to orphanages around the world. I've written beekeeping books for 4-H groups, like I said, blog sites. I've done shows for Worlds of Wonder. And the one thing I tell everybody is that if you're going to have bees, you need to know your local and state laws. I live in Wyoming, and Wyoming is a big agricultural facility for bees and apiary use. And if you do not register your bees, the state will come in and burn your bees because they don't know if you're taking care of them. If they see them and they're not registered with the state, they'll burn them. So it's one of those things. You do need to know your state and local laws of keeping bees. And beekeeping, what they call the backyard beekeeper or the urban beekeeper, is growing immensely across the United States. And places like downtown New York and New Jersey, they're putting them on the roofs of skyscrapers. And I think urban bees do really well due to the fact of all the floral that you get inside the inner city and the variety of the nectar that they get. You know, wildflower honey is awesome. Mm-hmm. So, you know, beekeeping like that, you know, you can do bees anywhere. A guy told me, he says, you know, I live in the desert. And I said, bees will find flowers. And they don't only get it from flowers. They get nectar from trees. They get it from brushes, you know, grass, you know, there's wheat, you know, you got buckeye wheat honey and stuff like that. So they'll find it. You can have bees anywhere as long as you do it according to any kind of laws you got, because you know how the government always wants to get the finger in something. So,
oh, yeah.
You really got to kind of watch that. So when it comes to the aspect of keeping bees, the gentleman that I learned from, his family's been keeping bees for over 80 years, and they've had bees forever. And he told me, he said, you go get a cardboard box, you put some wood across the top so the bees have something to build foundation off of.
I'm sorry, what was that?
A piece of wood over the top or foundation. Foundation is what you use to have the bees build off of. Mm-hmm. You put a little bit of wax on top of the wood so they can build comb off of. Or you can get industrial things from bee companies that have pre-made wax foundation or board that the bees just built the comb off of.
Mm-hmm.
And he says you put that foundation or that just start of some beeswax. He says you go out in the woods and you find a feral swarm of bees. And you make sure you get them out with the queen and you put them in there. Those are free bees. The box was free. There's only your time, and for an investment of $20, you've got a package of bees that you're using. To go out and, you know, buy package of bees is an agricultural business. There's companies that sell 3 to 4 pounds of bees. Those are 10 to 20,000 bees with a queen. And you can buy those for $75 to $120, depending on the variety of bee. And then you go and buy your beehive, which is about $200, and put those bees in that beehive and start beekeeping. The other aspect that I tell everybody, and this is a phase two, that if you're going to be a beekeeper and have bees, I want you to think of yourself as a horse breeder. You don't go get a horse and just stick it in a corral. You feed it, you water it, you ride it. You work with them. You become a good horse trainer. If you're going to be a beekeeper, be a good beekeeper. Don't just say, well, we're going to get some bees and we're going to have honey next year, and, you know, your bees end up getting mites and they fly to somebody else's hive and now they've got mites, or you get a foul brood. I mean, bees are an agricultural development that, if not taken naturally, introduce themselves with problems. So if you're going to be a beekeeper, be a good one. And I recommend that you contact a bee organization such as, you know, your local beekeepers clubs. There's thousands of books from The Backyard Beekeeper, which is the handbook for your urban beekeeper that wants to be all natural, to your commercial beekeeper. I mean, there's even one of those books, Beekeeping for Dummies. But it's without the knowledge, you're not gonna get into it. But bees can be taken and put anywhere. They have them in Alaska all the way to the deserts. And the funding cost is around $300 to get something that's friendly for a novice to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And after getting into it, you know, it's just basically a little trial and error. It's like anything. As a survivalist, there's your armchair survivalist. He's got his books and stuff, but does he really go out and practice starting a fire with a magnifying glass or a battery?
Well, hopefully he does.
If he doesn't, he's not a survivalist.
No.
If you're not out working with your bees and doing things with them, you're not a beekeeper. And, you know, those are the basic three steps is know your laws, get antiquated through books or lectures, some club classes, and get some knowledge, and then just start out small with maybe two beehives. You know, with all the equipment, if you have three beehives and you have all the equipment, you're looking at $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a one-time spend. And then after that, the bees are there forever. They will make their own queens. They'll repopulate their own hive. And as long as you work with them and make sure you're planting, I always plant sunflowers because, you know, a dandelion bees love, but only two bees can land on a dandelion. A sunflower, 40 bees can land on that big head of that sunflower to feed
from.
So, you know, you plant some sunflowers and you work with your bees. You go out. Bees work on pheromone scent and sound vibration. Go out, put your iPod to some, you know, Chekhov or, you know, something that's real subtle and change the pitch of the bees. You know, put your iPod butt there and let the vibration, and the bees get that little vibration. They're happy.
Mm.
And they see you every day. Oh, that's the guy that comes out. He's been bringing us our honey back. You know, I only produce honey with my bees, and I harvest it on Mother's Day. Whatever they usually make during the year, if it's over 30 pounds, I will take around October. But, you know, I usually leave them about 30 pounds. They made it. You know, a bee only makes a teardrop of honey in a lifetime. So a jar of honey is thousands of bees' worth of work.
Hmm.
So, you know, you make it and you give it back to them, and you become a good beekeeper. And after about 2 years of keeping bees, you know, all of a sudden you stockpile about 120 pounds of honey to 300 pounds of honey from your beehives. And it was the only initial investment plus your time. And that's one reason why I think it's great for, you know, like the survivalist or the urban person that wants to do some stuff, is that once you get your, you know, if you go out and find feral bees that are free and you get on a website and it shows you how to build your own beehive from pallets or scrap lumber, it was only your time, and they're free, and then just your time in it. And the next thing you know, I've got wax for candles, I'm making lip balm for sunburn medicine, I've got pollen that we use for my kids when they go to swimming events for a little push of boost of energy. You know, I've got some royal jelly, which is known to be the fountain of youth. A bee only lives for 26 days, but a queen bee lives for 5 years, and it's a science phenomenon that, you know, royal jelly is actually a fountain of youth. So taking that, I'm rebuilding my body, and it's not costing me anything but my time.
Mm-hmm. Now, what exactly is royal jelly?
Royal jelly is more of a glucose supplement that the bees make, and what it does is it's nectar that the bees refine down to only have the basic elements that's necessary for the queen bee to live. They're eliminating the flavor aspects of the honey and everything, and they're gelling it down, and they're only putting it in certain cells. All larvae start out in royal jelly to start feeding, and then once they get to where they're feeding, they mix bee pollen with the nectar and make like a bee bread, and they pack it in there with the larva, and then they cap the larva, and the larva eat it, and then they, 26 days, female bees are born, and they work. The queen bees only fed royal jelly, and she's only getting the proteins and the nutrients that are completely necessary for the bees to live, and she doesn't feed herself. The bees feed her it, and she lives to be about 5 years instead of the 26 days.
Hmm.
And it just has to do with the formulation of them taking everything out and making more of a jelly substance out of the nectar, where it's just the pure raw proteins and amino acids that the bees need to actually make it.
That's really interesting. You know, and we're going to have to stop right now. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I've got some more questions for you. So those of you listening, just hang tight, and we'll be right back.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files and listen on your phone or personal computer. And when you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com. Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. In uncertain times, you need gear you can count on. That's why I teamed up with Daniel Vitalis to launch SupplySource.com. It's a new online retailer offering extremely durable gear for emergency preparedness and long-term survival. Everything we offer survives my daily use test on a ranch in Texas, plus Daniel's outdoor endurance test in the rugged wilderness of Maine. Most of the stuff we test ends up in a pile of trash because it breaks. The stuff that doesn't break, we stock it on SupplySource.com. To get the site started, we've launched it with a line of rugged, reliable, waterproof LED flashlights, now chosen by military and law enforcement everywhere. And we'll soon be adding a whole new brand of emergency water filters, family defense gear, and urban survival tools. When you want your gear to really work, get it from SupplySource.com.
Okay, we're back, and you're listening to Survival and Beyond on Natural News Radio, as well as the Prepper Podcast Radio Network and the Free America Now Network. And I'm your host, Ed Corcoran. Today we're talking to Michael Jordan, and he is a survival expert as well as an expert beekeeper. And right now we're talking about some of the benefits of beekeeping and some of the products that we enjoy from bees, and how beekeeping is a vital, self-sustainable practice. And you know, if you're gonna be living off the grid, if you're gonna be living self-reliant lifestyle, you know, it's best to investigate beekeeping. It's more than just a hobby; it's a way of life. And Michael, another question I want to ask you is, like, we don't see bees around in the wintertime. And before I started learning about beekeeping, I assumed that, you know, when the wintertime comes, well, that's it. The bees all die off. You dismantle the hive, and then you just start again new in the springtime. But you actually maintain your hives all year round. Is that correct?
That's correct. When people tell you you're busy like a bee, because you work yourself to death, the bees never stop. They work themselves completely to death. That's why bees only live for 26 days. They work themselves to death for their colony. And in the wintertime, when it starts to get below 40 degrees, the bees do what they call bundling. And it's just kind of like what people see about penguins. The cold ones move to the inside. The hot ones move to the outside. It's almost like a heartbeat. You know, they move in and out.
Mm-hmm.
The colder it gets, the bees bundle tighter to keep the queen warm. The warmer it gets, they start fanning out. And eventually it becomes warm enough where they're working, and they're like, it's hot. We probably need to get outside and see if there's any more food source. But when you do bees in the wintertime, you know, around October, a lot of beekeepers have harvested all their honey, and they put feeders in to feed the bees, and then they wrap. I usually just go to Salvation Army or something, and I pick up some old sleeping bags and throw them over my hives to keep them around 40 degrees and more. But the bees, you know, they produce enough heat to keep that beehive constantly around 86 to 97 degrees constantly inside that hive.
Hmm.
So just keeping the wind break off of them and what we call winterizing them, like trying to keep them a little bit warmer, they'll survive the whole winter as long as they can feed themselves. I've never lost bees myself from colony collapse disorder or CCD, but I have bees have starved because I haven't been able to get up in the mountains to check them here in Wyoming because of the blizzards or snow. And when it's that cold, the bees will starve themselves to death to try to keep that queen warm. So they won't get out and hit their honey cells or, you know, the feeders that people put out because they don't want to lose the heat source to keep that queen warm. But, yeah, they'll last all winter long, and they'll just, as soon as the springtime hits, you know, when the flowers start blooming around Mother's Day, they're out there, and they're working.
Now, do they go into any kind of stasis? Or you said the bees, they have a lifespan of about 26 days. And so throughout the winter, there are bees that are hatching, there are bees that are being born, and others are dying off. Or do they, like, does their metabolism slow down, or does anything like that happen?
Correct. Their metabolism slows down. And like I said, bees work themselves to death. They're not out flying and working. Their lifespan is a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
A beehive consists of a queen, 90% female honeybees, and then about 10% drones, which are the males.
Hmm.
When wintertime starts, they kick all the males out because the males are worthless in a beehive. Their goal is to fly off and breed with queens and die.
Right.
And that's all that the males do. You know, they have that perfect life cycle where the girls feed them, they breed, they die. I mean, it's the perfect life cycle. But,
yeah.
It's kind of like most men around here, we eat potato chips and watch TV. So
yeah.
They kick them all out, and then due to the fact that the younger bees that have just been born before wintertime or haven't started working here yet, they're starting to learn to clean the hive and start building propolis to seal the hive for the winter, and then they bunch up. But due to the fact they're not flying constantly, burning up the energy source and burning up their lifespan, they're called attendants. And that hive will go from about 140,000 bees down to about 60,000. Because the other ones just don't come back because they're like, you know, I use up, you know, it's a sacrificial ritual. And, you know, I use up the food source. My colony is more important than I am. And so they don't come back. It's just like the drones, the girls kick them out and they're like, well, you know, there'll be more of us next year. And they just fly off and they go off and die somewhere.
And that sounds like communism.
Well, it's one of those things, you know.
Are you raising communist bees, Michael?
No, I'm raising a what I call a formation of a colony for the better of life. My company's name is called A Bee Friendly Company, with BEE
mm-hmm.
being bee friendly, and it was named by a 6-year-old little girl during the Gulf War. And she was watching all the war and stuff on television. And it's one reason why I haven't had television in 11 years. But she watched this and she goes, all these different people, religions, and all over fight. And she goes, and we go out in the backyard and we watch the bees, and they don't fight in the beehive. And I said, no, they don't. Their purpose is to be one, to make it no matter what. She goes, well, how come those bees in that hive don't fight with those bees in that hive? And I said, because they mind their own business, because their goals are to protect only what they have and not to infiltrate and take what others have.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, well, why can't everybody just be friendly then? And that's how we got our name, was from a six-year-old girl that just wished everybody would, the agenda is just to make it and not interfere and take the freedoms away from somebody else.
Right.
I think that's what bee calling is. I don't think it's communism. It's that they're all, you know, my bees are free-range bees. I don't brand them, and I don't fence them in.
Yeah.
They work, and they're free-range bees. I try to work with them. I have a lot of problems with people that talk about, those are your bees, and I say, how do you know? Well, you're the beekeeper in our, and I live downtown in the capital of Cheyenne, and I even keep bees in my house there. And when I first started keeping bees, they said, those are your bees. I said, how do you know? I said, did you catch one that had my little MJ brand on its hip?
Yeah.
You know, they're free-range bees. Later that summer, he brought over so much zucchini and so many beans. He goes, man, I've never had so many beans. Those bees work. And I said, they do work. They, you know, bees produce one-third of the food source of the world.
Right.
Without bees, one-third of what you eat is gone.
And
it's what it is.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a perfect segue into the next issue that I wanted to talk about. And I'm sure that you've been following over the last few years, there's been a palpable die-off in the bee population worldwide. And in other countries, they've actually tracked this down to GMO plants and products, pesticides, but also the GMO corn that they've engineered that produces its own toxin is responsible for killing off a lot of the bee population. And beekeepers out in Poland, they took up arms and had GMOs banned from they had legislation drafted in Poland that bans GMO plants. And the same thing is here in America, of course, you know, like we can't seem to do anything about these GMO plants and these poisonous products and everything. So, you know, I want you to tell our listeners, you know, exactly put a fine point on how important it is for human survival, for the survival of our species, how much we rely on bees.
Oh, God, this is the topic that has got me in trouble everywhere I go.
You won't get in trouble here, I promise you.
Well, I really don't care. I do what I do because I'm a free man in my United States. And
right on.
I say what I want to, as long as I'm not offending somebody in any form that's going to create a riot, or I'm not progressive that way. But I will tell you that I've gone to places, and GMO stands for genetically modified organisms, from anything from animal to plant. And if man made it, I'm a man and I can make it too. I might not make it as good as some men, but I can make it. If Mother Nature has made it, you do not modify it or alter it or try to do it, because Mother Nature did it the best the first time.
Right.
And GMO, genetic material, has altered all kinds of things, and it's created some insects that, you know, will eventually probably kill us. Or
right.
Plant food that will eventually kill us. Because once you get adapted to it and overcome it, it genetically modifies you.
Right.
And I'm going to use a name, and you know, I don't know how often you tell your listeners this, but I despise, I won't use the word hate, because hate's a bad word, but I despise a company named Monsanto immensely. I speak against them. Monsanto is currently responsible for 90% of all the genetic engineered seeds in the United States market and outside of the seed market.
Mm-hmm.
And they make herbicides that are resistant to weeds and pests. And that modification gets in the pollen. The bees eat it and it kills them. It has a nicotine-based saturation in it, and it makes the bees intoxicated, messes with their neurological system for flight, and it collapses the bees, colony collapse disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, Poland has outlawed it. France was the first one to say that if you bring a nicotine-based pesticide in our country, you'll get thrown in jail.
Right.
And, you know, it was recently banned in Poland and because of the dying bee population. The corn that it gets in it, you know, I can't control God's wind, and I can't control what the bees do, but the bees get into some of these GMO fields, and then they'll go pollinate another field, and you get cross-contamination.
Right.
They say that, you know, that some GMO foods make animals sterile. There's big pig farms where these guys have fed this genetically enhanced corn to their pigs, lost their pig farms because the pigs have went sterile and they cannot produce piglets.
Mm-hmm.
So if that corn's getting into a food source and those pigs that it isn't that GMO-based modification in the pig, so when you eat the pork from the pig, aren't you receiving that? And they already show evidence that men that have eaten processed foods containing some of this genetic modification are starting to become sterile themselves.
Yeah.
I can't describe how worthless GMOs are. I cannot describe how hurtful I think they are with their premeditation to murder to our society.
Mm-hmm.
By trying to be the only ones, we're the only ones. It's like the FDA coming and telling me, you have a heart problem, and this is the pill that we recommend for you to take. Just remember, in the little fine print, this could also cause massive headaches, nausea, diarrhea, and death.
Sudden death, but
As an FDA, I'm telling you this is safe.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am out eating burdock root that grows naturally in my backyard. Some people call it a weed, but, you know, I eat it naturally. And for some reason, it reduces my high blood pressure. And
right. Yet
it's not recommended by the FDA. But here's another government entity telling me that GMOs are certified for health. All right, great. Let me dump another $1,000 to $1.7 billion. To my legislative unit to pass that to be good, to let them tell me that this is good when, like I said, Mother Nature's been making this product forever.
Right.
And it seems to be doing good since then. Why would you modify it to kill my bees, to make people sterile, to use for fundamental, I mean, you and I both know cattle do not eat corn.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw a cow in a cornfield? Chowing away.
No, they're grazers. They eat alfalfa and clover that's pollinated by my bees. Without that pollinization in clover and alfalfa, you don't have cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Without that cattle, my kids don't get meat. But if they're going to feed that, oh, this is corn-fed cattle, awesome. I don't even know what's in that stuff. They buy, is it residual stuff from the biodiesel plant?
Right.
That's made corn that makes ethanol, is that what you're feeding the cattle? Yeah, I'm not one to be talking about Monsanto, GMO, the Geronimo drug that they put into these plants that, oh, this is to help reduce pesticide. Man, it kills people. It causes so much, you know, I've even heard people, and I don't know if it's for fact, but eating these enhanced foods like that causes autism.
Right.
I don't know for sure, but I've heard that. But I do also work for the school district here in Wyoming, and I see girls coming to school that are in fifth and sixth grade that are already developing and going into a menstrual cycle.
I see
boys fourth and fifth grade that are already shaving from these hormone growths that they're putting in these cattle and using these GMO foods. So these kids are immature, and they're aging and dying faster. It's driving me crazy.
Well, you know, and you can go chase down all the roots and branches of that. And I'll tell you, I'm not afraid, and my listeners know, and everybody, you know, like I write about it on my website at survivalandbeyond.net. I am no friend of Monsanto or GMOs or the whole big agro, big corporate, you know, agricultural factory farm practices and whatnot. And I'm not afraid to say that this goes beyond money. This, you know, the average person would say, well, that's so they can make more money, of course. And that's why they modify the corn so they can make ethanol out of it and use it for all these different things. This goes beyond money. This is a full on genocidal assault on the people of not just this country, but of the world at large, because what they're doing, and this is well known, it's well documented, all the health, the adverse health effects that GMOs have on the human body, like you mentioned before, just in a common sense phraseology, to think that you can artificially manipulate something that nature made and it's going to be better for you, that's just insanity. But they're doing. We are useless eaters to them. They want to wipe out at least 85% of us, and they're going to do it through our food. It's food control. They have.
Oh my gosh, Ed, are you talking about New World Order that these guys don't want us to be here unless we contribute to their fascist regime?
Unless we can be their slaves, they have no use for us. That's why they're programming us. That's why they're brainwashing us. That's why we have television. You mentioned that you ditched your television 11 years ago. I haven't watched television in over a decade myself, because you can see the brainwashing going on. Once you stop and you start to wake up and you realize what the true agenda really is, people will call you a kook. People will call you a conspiracy theorist. Well, you know what? If you're too asleep to notice what's going on, you can't wake up and smell the New World Order and the corporate oligarchy, then I have no sympathy for you.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. You know, I'm watching them pass these new things that I can't live off the grid, that I need the electrical company to tell me what I got to do. I got solar and wind. I really don't need them to tell me what to do. I have my garden, and I produce about 70% of the food that I can and eat at my house. And due to the fact that I have bees, I have over-pollination where I get a tremendous amount of food source. Mm-hmm. I've got my own medical supplies and stuff that I get from these plants, as well as, and they're making these H.R. 285 laws and these bills that I can't garden at home. There was a lady I just read in Idaho or Iowa that she was growing her own crops at home because she was making a survivalist garden because she lost her job. The biggest devastation in America is to lose your job.
Absolutely. You lost it. Yeah, talk about a survival situation. Hey, you don't need a disaster. All you need to do is lose your job in this economy, and it takes you 8 to 9 months to find another one. What are you going to do?
I don't know what you're eating. I don't know how you're paying your bills. If you're, you know, that's a travesty. That's not me, the crazy prepper that you know, they say you're a survivalist and a prepper. You're just waiting for the end of the world. And no, I'm not.
No.
I'm just preparing myself that if I have a disaster, such as losing my job, I can feed my family for up to 6 months without having to, you know, say, hey, you know, I guess we're going to have to rely on the government and go get food stamps. That means the government is paying my wage, and if the government says this is what you have to do, I have to do it now in order to get my food sourced. No, that's not me being crazy. That's just me being practical.
Right.
And, you know, you were talking about the GMOs and the food source, you know, and all this. This lady in Idaho was growing her own little survival garden, had high blood pressure and diabetes, and she said, you know what, I looked into some herbology and stuff. I cannot afford these FDA recommended drugs that could kill me. Mm-hmm. So I'll grow my own stuff like burdock, and I'll grow some hops. Well, your local city government said if they're not edible plants for human consumption and they're over 2 feet tall, you can't have them. So she planted nut seed, and she grew some fruit plants and trees and had this burdock growing and some in there. You know, hops grows up to, you know, 90 feet in the air. Mm. And she grew this stuff, and they came in, and they ripped it out of her yard and said that you cannot do this. That these are, she says, everything I've got is listed in human consumption. I'm practicing holistic medicine. And they said, no, we looked into it. We've been watching you. We ripped it out. So I thought to myself, I own my property. I spent my own money on this stuff, did my own research, and tried to stay within the restrictions of my government, and you premeditatedly came in and stole my medicine. Mm-hmm. If I die, isn't that premeditated murder?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought it was, but, you know, evidently they don't think it is. And, you know, people say, well, I think that's just your whack job mentality. And I said, no, it's me watching out for my family and my friends that if you don't, you know, if you don't stand up and fight for what you believe in now, it'll be gone. And as a free man here in America, keeping my bees, like I said, doing my laws with my local government of the state of Wyoming, and telling people just look into it. I'm not crazy. I'm trying to do whatever I can to be here. So I don't need some government telling me that I can't eat cattails. If I'm making bread, I'm making bread from it. You can't tell me that I can't eat it. I'm making bread from cattail. You can't rip it out of my yard. It's filtering my water to my rice paddy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and, well, the thing is, you nailed it right on the head. It's the FDA right there, and the FDA, and I've mentioned so many times on my show that my listeners, I'm sure, are probably starting to get tired of hearing about it, is that the FDA is bought and sold between the pharmaceutical industry and Big Agro. You know, they've carved up that empire between them. Well, you look at the revolving door in the FDA where all of the high-ranking officials in that agency are all CEOs from one corporation or another. It's like the agency is there to allow the corporations to regulate themselves. And they're starting to make it, they're starting to twist and brainwash people into thinking that if it's not FDA approved, if it doesn't come from a drug company, then it's quackery. Whereas we've been using this stuff for thousands of years, and, you know, like I saw a show, I believe it wasn't even a talk show. It was the Colbert Report. You know, occasionally I think it's funny, and I watched this, and this was not funny. This infuriated me. They had this pharmaceutical industry representative, and he's talking about the pharmaceutical industry as if it were the godsend of the human race, as if, you know, the human – as if people, everybody died in childbirth before the pharmaceutical industry came along. You know, it's like, what did we do for the first 200,000 years that you know, Homo sapiens existed? You know, without drugs and pharma, we went to nature. We got all of our remedies from nature, and it works just fine. In fact, most of the drugs that they push down our throats are based on natural analogs. They're based on the natural components. They just synthesize it, you know. And what it is, it's full-on poisoning the populace, and I'm sorry, you might call me extreme, you might call me radical, but it is genocide is what's happening. They want to reduce, look at the UN, go on the UN website, they have population reduction programs in place. It's called Agenda 21, and they're not talking about population, they're not talking about slowing down population growth, they're talking about reducing it. You know what that means? That means killing people.
Yeah, as a beekeeper, you know, I follow mostly bee stuff because I have contacts all over the world, and I've developed programs for youth beekeeping because most of your beekeepers are 80 and older. Uh-huh. And there's a company that's called Bee Logistics, and you want to talk about how these companies work. They're in Monsanto. They're the largest corporation that makes nicotine-based pesticides, a $52 billion a year industry for them, dumps money into legislature. Monsanto, in fact, they're a worldwide corporation using their product, wants to keep their product out there. Banned in France, banned in Poland now, working into almost 15 different countries now of being banned.
GMOs are banned in most of Europe, as far as I know.
Yeah, and Bee Logistics, which is the largest bee CCD collapse tester in the world. Their mission is to be guardians, and they were developing vaccines and testing bees, taking care of spoofs like cell phones are killing the bees. They are the largest one in the world, and they proved Monsanto and Bayer Corporation kill the bees, causing CCD's collapse, making that $15 billion direct loss for crop to production. Mm-hmm. Monsanto went right in and bought them. Now, you want to talk about how they manipulate, look it up. That's not, and you can't, it takes a while to find it, but it says right there, Monsanto buys largest bee corporation, to hide their flaw. And
sure.
These are the same people that are pushing your legislature to say, well, these pesticides are perfectly okay for crops, as they make a stock of corn that I personally know grows maybe 3 ears of good quality corn. It doesn't grow 5 to 6 ears of corn, 1.5 feet long, 3.5 inches in diameter. It's Mother Nature didn't make it that way. Monsanto did.
Right.
And it says right there, when you get those packages of this genetically modified corn that Monsanto did to change the pollen in it that kills my bees, it's going to kill you too.
Sure.
And for you to believe that this agenda isn't happening, your sheep following your flock, and that's terrible. It makes me outraged.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I teach survivalism, and like I said, you're armchair survivalists that can read it. More power to you. The guy that gets, you know, the lone wolf survivalist never makes it. Get with a group. Get with an organization. Hear what other people that are smart, not watching this TV propaganda, listening to this politics on TV of diverse, you know, they're not even talking about the issues. It's pointing fingers at each other.
Mm-hmm.
Get down with some people that want to talk about it and want to practice some of this stuff. See what they say.
Right.
They're not living on the government assistance, listening to, this is what I have to. You're a free man here in this United States. Think for yourself a little bit.
Well, you know, the government hates self-reliant people. They, you know, and we talked about this off the air and in previous conversations, and the more people that are dependent on government, the more easily they're controlled. So this is why there's this pressure and there's propaganda going on against preppers. You can see it in the media with that ridiculous show, Doomsday Preppers. I have a couple of friends personally who were done wrong by that show. And what they want to do is, you know, self-reliance is becoming a dirty word. Prepping is definitely becoming synonymous with crackpot. And because they don't want people living like our grandparents did. You know, we talked about this, you know, like my grandparents, and I've mentioned before on the show, they canned their own food. They kept a stockpile of food in their pantry. They weren't kooks. They weren't nuts. They weren't expecting the New World Order. They lived in the Depression era, and they knew that at any given moment, your world can fall apart around you, and you better be prepared to take care of yourself and your family in case something like that happens. And as you mentioned earlier in the program, you know, that could just be as simple as a job loss. You know, that could just be as simple as the company you're working for going out of business because they're not too big to fail, they're not big enough to get the bailouts, and there you are, you know. The government wants you to be on the dole. They want you collecting those welfare checks and those food stamps so that they can push you around, and you've got there's nothing, you have no recourse, there's nothing you can do about it.
You know how you talked about they call you a crackpot, and they call you, you know, this is another one of those nut jobs. He's a prepper.
Yep.
How come, you know, I've taken the FEMA response course. I've taken Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
I am not ignorant because I choose not to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it says right there in the FEMA response course, you know, you need to prep for 72-hour bug-out situation. Here you're telling me that I should be prepared for it, and I need to do these things. But if I start looking into out-and-home foods, or I start looking up how to can my own stuff and start buying products for it, you're watching me because you think I'm a kook and I might be one of these radical...
No, they think you're They think you're a terrorist.
Yeah, I'm a terrorist with my little group that we meet together and we go camping and practice lighting a fire together.
Right.
Sweet. I really appreciate you calling me a terrorist when I'm sitting here and I've got 37 people that I'm teaching that if you make home brew and then you make ethanol out of it to have an extra fuel source or an antiseptic if you need it, I'm the guy flying the plane into the building. Thing.
Well, you know, maybe we shouldn't have talked about using bees as a weapon earlier in the show.
Well, you know, the government right now, DARPA.
Yeah.
You know who DARPA is?
Oh yeah, that's where the internet came from. The DARPA net.
The Defense Advanced Project Research Agency.
Right.
They use bees right now. Right. They find abandoned landmines. They introduce chemicals and stuff into the beehive so the bees know it, and then they go around, you know, they're you know, landmines can, I think, 20,000 people a year, and they're all over. They were like a big sale item from the United States for a long time. But the University of Montana has done research with this guy named Jerry Rumenschek, I think is how you pronounce his name, and they've introduced bees to some of these chemicals with air and water and vegetation, and these bees land on the landmines like they're swarming and mark them. So even our government uses that stuff, and for them to tell you they don't, that you believe them, they're using bees. I'm using bees for my survival aspect, and they're using their bees for military aspect. I'm not getting it.
Well, yeah, they do all kinds of stuff like that, like mounting lasers on dolphins and, you know, training animals to, find mines or, you know, whatever. You hear about that stuff all the time, and it's crazy. You know, it's like you mentioned before about the little girl's observation that, you know, like, oh, the bees don't fight with each other, and, you know, it's all about this imperialistic, and you're going to get me on another rant about our imperialistic agenda. I think I'll save that for another time. I'll probably discuss it sometime, at the opening segment of the show or whatever. I'll, you know, spare our listeners that. But yeah, it's just getting really ridiculous, folks. And, you know, and if you don't see it happening, or maybe, who knows, you know, like, I like to think that my listeners are of a like mind. You know, they think like we do. I'm sure there are some people out there who are thinking, oh my God, how can you possibly think that? Because, you know, you've been brainwashed by the school system, you've been brainwashed by television, you've been brainwashed to believe that, you know, our government is here to help people, and we're freeing people, making the world safe for democracy and whatever. Well, you know, we don't even have democracy here. And I hope we never do. You know, because that's not what the founding fathers wanted. Democracy is not a free, it's mob rule. You know, it's like when you have the majority of the people, you know, imposing their will on a minority, that's not right. And I don't want to see that. I don't know where I'm going with this. Maybe you can bail me out.
you talked about how bees in the society, how this little girl saw that, and you're talking about being free in America and being able to be a survivalist and be home, you know, home educated and stuff. I work at the school district. And when a child comes up to me and says, well, you know, the Constitution's old, but it might need to be modified, makes me sick.
Right.
And it has to go back before we're talking about the FDA, GMO, that Satanistic company Monsanto. Like I said, I'm a beekeeper. I love my girls. I love watching them work. I sit out in the backyard, play the harmonica. My boy plays with them. Mm-hmm. There's 20,000 varieties of bees in the world, and 1,500 of them are honeybees. Do people ever know that? No, because our schools don't teach agriculture development. They teach you need to go to work for Monsanto.
Yeah.
This government entity. Do I want to be a truck driver? No, you should work for the government, because then they can tell you what you need to do.
Yeah.
Do I want to be a beekeeper? Well, I don't know, right? Can the government do it better? Because they sure the hell can't do it any better than Mother Nature's been doing it from the beginning of time.
Right. And you know, this gets into the whole thing about the, you know, if you don't, this is a perfect example here. If you're still not convinced, that your government is trying to destroy you and they're trying to take over your food supply, take a look what's happening to all of small family farms in America. You know, we talked about this earlier, where, you know, like, you can't even have your own kids. I mean, family farming is a time-honored, centuries-old tradition. You know, going back for as long as there have been human beings, as long as human beings have developed agriculture, you know, the family farm has always been the backbone of our society. And now the government are telling farms that you can't have your children, if they're 16 years or younger, you can't have them even sweeping out the stalls, because that's considered child endangerment.
Oh, child endangerment. So in other words, my family farm, if I can't teach this kid responsibility to take over a family business, I'm at fault, because I'm enabling them to live off of whatever you say is good, and our family farm falls. But yeah, you know, You know,
what they're saying is you as a parent...
I can bring an illegal immigrant in to work in that farm for half the wage that doesn't do near as good job, but I can't have my kid work there.
No, exactly. What they're saying is that you don't know what's best for your own kids. The government knows better than you do. And if you have them so much as pick up a rake, then they're going to come in and send social services in there and have your kids taken away from you. Which, again, right there in itself, again, wake up call, people. Your state has the ability to come in and take your children away from you, right? That tells you something. That tells you, and I can go into the whole thing about the birth certificate and about the origins of that and you know, the whole admiralty law aspects of it, and that's a whole other show right there. But your state has the ability to come in and tell you, we know better, you know, than you do as far as how to raise your kids. What you're doing is dangerous to them. You're putting them in harm's way. Like, all you're doing is you're teaching them the same stuff that you learned from your parents and they learned from their parents and generations after that for hundreds and hundreds of years. Now all of a sudden, oh, no, that's no good. You know why? Because they want – there's legislation in place. There's executive orders, the rural council – the executive order that Obama signed, where basically they want to come in and take over all of our agricultural land and hand it over to Monsanto and to the factory farms.
Yeah, I don't think the Second Amendment would let them do that at my house.
Well put.
And that's a bill of my rights.
Yeah.
And that says that I just would have invoked my Second Amendment that says that I can stand up to tyranny from my own government.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. It's straight out tyranny. And you mentioned all these bills. S-510 is another one of my favorites. That's the Food Safety Modernization Act. And there's like tons of bills floating around in Congress, and they're all getting passed because they stuff them inside another bill as an earmark, and nobody ever reads these things. Because they're 2,000 pages long, and they give them a deadline and say, you have to vote on this in 2 days, you know? Well, you know what? It'll take me longer than 2 days to read this whole thing, so I'm just going to vote the way everybody else is voting. And that's the way the whole circus is running. Everybody's got a hand in somebody's till. This is benefiting a whole lot of, you know, with lobbyists. Now, that's the first thing we ought to do, is we ought to outlaw the lobbyists. Forget about the lawyers. We'll get to the lawyers later, but the lobbyists right now... They're just from the pharmaceutical industry alone, there are more lobbyists in Washington than there are members of Congress. And
Well, I can't believe you told me about the Colorado law that I can't keep my rainwater.
Oh, no, no,
the state of Colorado's rainwater.
And Colorado's not the only state.
I don't know how they got their deal and contract with God about that, their rainwater from their state.
Yeah, if it falls out of the sky... Over the state of Colorado, it is illegal for you to catch it and use it as drinking water or use it as whatever, you know, for your own personal use, because the state can't meter it, and the state assumes water rights over, even if it's suspended in the air and it's hovering over the state of Colorado, it belongs to the state, and you can't catch it, you can't use it, you can't do anything with it. Again, this is making you dependent on the system. This is making you dependent on your municipal water, which I'm sure they're dumping with, you know, fluoride. I don't know this for a fact, but I'm assuming that fluoride has made its way just pretty much everywhere into the local water supply. In Massachusetts, where I grew up, they were putting fluoride in the water back in 1982, and nobody was aware of it. Nobody mentioned it. Nobody wasn't in the news. It wasn't. You know, there were no flyers going out saying, hey, look, we're going to start poisoning the water, people. So, you know, of course not. They wouldn't do that. But, you know, I have to assume that you know, if you live in a city, then they're putting fluoride in the water. And that's what they want.
My bees can't drink, you know, when it rains and it gets on the grass and my bees get that water. I need to be paying the state of Colorado for using that water to feed my bees.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're going to start, like, going after other state, like, border states. The states that border around, you know, they'll be going to New Mexico and Utah and saying, you know, we're pretty sure some of our rain must have drifted over and fallen on your state, so you're going to have to pay us some money for that. Because that was our rain. The wind just blew it that way.
Well, when you told me that, I got to thinking, I said, I need to start charging Colorado for the receptacles that are getting the rain. I mean, it's damaging my roof, damaging my siding,
Mm-hmm.
And it's your rain's falling on my stuff, which collects it to get it into your groundwater, and I need some compensation from the state for my collection devices for your rain.
Yeah.
Or don't have the rain, you know, you need to build some dome shelter over my house. So, yeah, I mean, you told me that. I was like, you're kidding me. God and rain, and
I couldn't
pay tax on it.
I couldn't make this up. There would be no earthly reason for me to wake up one morning and say, hey, you know what? I'll bet you they're charging people for rainwater in Colorado. No, this is true. This is absolutely true. And I know that they're doing it in other states. I haven't gone into that. I haven't researched what other states are going on because I was just so I was shocked into amazement when I heard that Colorado was saying, you know, tell people you can't, you know, it's illegal to put a rain catchment system on your house, you know, because it belongs to them. You know, just like the air, the next thing you know, they're going to be charging for that. You know, there's going to be a tax on what their estimated...
The air is making me fat, along with that fork I'm using. I need to sue the fork company for helping stuff my mouth to make me so fat, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and that's the other thing, too, is like when it comes to food, I mean, it's when you're... When it seems like you're the only sane person in the world... And, you know, I mean, when you grow up and you live in a world and you live in a culture and a society and you get used to these things, you get used to McDonald's. You know, when I was a little kid, yeah, we had fast food. We had McDonald's. We had Burger King. And the whole 9 yards, we didn't have an obesity problem, though, because when we were growing up, I don't know how your parents were, but we didn't go to McDonald's, like, you know, as a supplement for regular, you know, home cooking. You know, it's like that was a treat. You know, every now and then, you know, maybe your coach would, you know, on the baseball team, the coach would take the team to McDonald's for a cheeseburger and fries. You know, that was a special thing. That wasn't something that you ate every day or even every week.
That wasn't my food substance. And
right.
Sitting down at the table with my mom and my dad, you sat down at the table. You discussed your day.
Yeah.
You cooked a meal that was, you know, anything from vegetable to meat. And as a kid, I didn't say, well, that's not what I wanted, Mom. I was hoping to have a McNugget. You know, I hear that. My kids are like, when do we get to go to McDonald's? I said, we're not. We're eating peas. But we have those, yes. I said, because we can those. And I know what kids know.
Yeah. Oh, boy. You know, if I ever complain to my parents about the food they gave me, I'll tell them, you know, shut up and eat what's on your plate. You're fortunate to have it because there are people in and yeah, it's cliche. You know, I mean, they didn't literally say they're starving children in India or anything like that. But they try to instill a sense of gratitude for what I had and not be whining about, you know, what I want. You know, it's more important.
Yeah.
It's more important to want what you have than it is to have what you want. And that's the lesson I learned from that. You know,
I wonder what they would say about my kids working with the bees.
Oh, child endangerment. Bring in social services. Watch out. I hate to say that on the air because, you know, who knows? Like, if it ends up happening, you're giving people ideas, you know? There's a legislator somewhere who's saying, that's not a bad idea. You know?
You know, my 4-year-old boy, he loves them. They crawl all over him. He loves them. He's been stung. But I tell you what, I've seen hundreds of bees on him, and he's in there, and he lifts the hives and he goes, look, they're working, Dad. Yeah, they're working.
Yeah.
He goes, and they're making us honey, and I love honey. I said, well, I'm glad, right? And you know, like I said, he's learning the aspect of responsibility for an agricultural business. So I'm not buying my kid a car, paying for his insurance, and giving him gas money. I'm teaching that if you take care of these bees, they are going to take care of you.
Right.
Financially, food-wise, and it makes you a good person.
And that's...
My son loves Batman, 4 years old, and I said, you know, Batman's a vigilante kid. He's a bad guy. The police want him. He goes, he helps people, Dad. I said, he does.
Yeah.
And I said, he does. He said, because I would rather die on my feet, Dad, than live on my knees. I was like, where did you hear that? And he goes,
wow.
From Batman. Just like Batman said, Dad, real men have brains and hearts, not guns. And I was like, he's learning. And he's not learning it at school. He's learning it from me. And That's when you talk about school and television, like, I don't have one. He gets to watch a movie one night before he goes to bed, and that's it. And he's learning this stuff at home and not on the Nintendo.
Yeah.
Or, God, I would hate for someone to come tell me that him out there with his pet bees is endangering him and have them try to come and get my kid.
Right. Well, you know, when you talk about you're teaching him responsibility, what you're teaching him is stewardship. What you're teaching him is a symbiotic relationship that humans have or should have with nature. And that's an invaluable lesson right there. And we had a sense of stewardship in this country for as long as we've been here, and we didn't have any government involvement. Do you think back in the 19th century the government was coming around telling farmers what's what, you know, telling them how to do their business? No, they trusted individual citizens. And they respected them for it, and they rewarded them for it. I mean, that's what our culture and our country ran on, were our farmers and our agricultural productivity and the stewardship. You know, there's a time when the citizens were trusted with the stewardship of the land, and that's what I'm getting at. Now we don't have that anymore. We have Agenda 21. We have foreign entities coming in and messing around with our legislation, with our way of doing things, basically, because they want to take that away. They want to take away those resources from the individual, from the common man, and they want to reserve that for the elite, for the oligarchy, for the corporate, you know, the corporate oligarchy, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it. It's all the same to me.
Yeah, and it's I'm with you. I don't understand. You know, the guy with all the money. And the guy that takes it all up and presses all this on me, and yet when he goes to build it and he needs help, why does he come to me then?
Yeah.
I don't want to work for you. I didn't want anything to do with it in the first place, but now you want me to fix it. I'm not going to this time.
Yeah. No, civil disobedience, man. That's, you know, that's what you have to do. Just stop playing the game. Stop letting people push you around. You get out and do something. I mean, hell, and to recap that, you know, it's like in Poland, it was beekeepers who spearheaded the move to ban GMOs in Poland. It was people, get regular folks. It wasn't politicians. It wasn't corporations. It wasn't groups or coalitions or anything. Well, I guess it was a group. It was a group of beekeepers, you know, and they were the most instrumental in having GMOs banned in Poland, right? We can do that here. You know, they say that you can't fight City Hall. Maybe you can't, but you can be City Hall. That's what, you know, if people could do it in Poland, right, this is America, for crying out sakes. This is the land of the free. And people standing around shrugging their shoulders saying, oh, well, you can't fight City Hall. What are you going to do about it? You know, and just take whatever they give you? Hells no. Get up, stand up, do not take it anymore.
Well, it told me, for the people, by the people.
Yep.
My Constitution is my Bill of Rights to initiate my Bill of Rights. Those were given to me by my forefathers, put on a flag of spear. And the spear is not a pipe to hang my head on.
Mm-hmm.
It's for me to hang in my yard and say, this is my country. This is my freedom.
Mm-hmm.
My colors do not run, but they will bleed.
Right.
And if I want to do stuff here in America, but I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not doing anything against my fellow man. I want to help them.
Right.
That's the difference between being a human and a human being. I want
mm-hmm.
to be a human being, and I want to reach in your darkest hour of need and reach out my hand and say, come on, let me help you up, man. I'll show you how to garden. I'll teach you to be a beekeeper. And if you sit there and you tell it, well, if you would just give me, I give nothing away. I do not have spare change. All my change I use.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to teach you how to use it. That's what my forefathers taught me.
Yeah.
Is that we work together to build a nation, no matter what you do. And when the government comes in and tells me that this is the food source, 90% of my food's going to be coming a GMO with these hormones and stuff. And if people want to know, that's that crazy guy down there that's talking about aquaponics. Yeah, dude, I got fish that feed my plants in rain gutters. I went to an old company that had rain gutters. Said, how much are those rain gutters? They said, hey, they're trash. You can have them.
Yeah.
I set up the rain gutters, and I made aquaponics. And, yeah, I'm that wacko down there that has all the fish feeding my plants.
Yeah, that's and that story that you told me about the that you were talking about earlier about the woman who just basically, I mean, that's you told me about that yesterday and you shared it with our listeners today, and I still cannot wrap my head. I cannot fathom that somebody would be that the government would come in and because you're growing burdock, that's a wild plant that grows out in, I mean, let alone the fact that we've got 750,000 people sitting in prison for minor possession of marijuana, another plant that, is unconstitutionally illegal. But to take somebody's medicine away from them, burdock is good for diabetics. It's good for, like you mentioned, high blood pressure. It's got medicinal qualities as well as it's a food. It is a food product. There's no two ways about that. Just about everything, it's easier to talk about the things that you can't, the plants that you can't eat, the poisonous plants that are out there, than it is to talk about the abundance of plants that are nutritious and healthy for you. And to have some government agency come in and say, into your own backyard and say that you can't grow this is illegal, that is straight up tyranny, man. And if that doesn't enrage, if that doesn't enrage you as a listener, if that doesn't enrage you as an American, I don't know what will. If that doesn't prove to you that there is tyranny and that we are not the free country that we like to tell other people we are, then I don't know what else to say.
The people, if you don't believe it, the woman's name is Denise Morrison, and it's, excuse me, I change it, she's from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and she had over 100 medicatable and edible plants in her front and backyard in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And the article says, human survival garden seized and destroyed by local authorities. It's illegal for self-reliant lifestyle, and it's a crime in America. And if you want to look it up, there's her name, there's the city, and it even has pictures of before and after that I've seen where she has this lush thing in front of her house, and it is gone. The government is cracking down on your liberties. And if you don't look into it, they're forcing you to not live off the grid. You're going to have to pay some company to come in and, make sure you have power to your house.
Yeah.
That they have these smart meters, and they want to know exactly what you're doing. And,
yep.
Man, all I want to do is just live my American dream. Have my family, eat good, go fishing when I have the ability to, and teach my kids to be self-reliant in their time of need.
Yep.
That's all I want to do.
And be left alone. Be left alone. If you're not hurting anybody, then you bring up the whole thing about the grid. Yeah, they don't want you. They want us all being dependent on the grid because they've got all of this all these sustainable development, and this is also ties into Agenda 21. When they get cap and trade rolling, man, I mean they've been trying. That thing will not die. That the cap and trade issue. Once that goes into effect, then all of our energy costs are going to skyrocket. Obama admitted himself when he was still a senator, when he was concocting this devious plan, he said, that's a straight up quote, that energy prices will necessarily skyrocket with the implementation of cap and trade. Once that happens, people are going to be burning their furniture to stay warm in the wintertime because they can't afford to buy heating fuel. And it's that this is what they don't, this is why they don't want people using, you've got the green Nazis, on one hand, they're all saying like, oh, solar power, renewable energy, blah, 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 and everything. Never mind the fact that it's not exactly commercially feasible yet. And it's never going to be because the government doesn't want people being self-sufficient that way. They want them being tied into the grid, paying into the system, and never, you'll never see the government actively, I mean, they have make some token gestures, but you'll never see the government actively promoting programs where people are energy self-reliant any more than you will. They're actually discouraging people from being self-reliant in terms of like growing your own food and living a running a homestead, living a self-reliant life. you're never going to see it because that's the antithesis of the, you know, they don't want you being independent. Basically,
well, I guess I better tear down my truck that runs on gasification from wood then, huh?
You have a wood gasifier on your truck? Holy smokes, I didn't know that. I would have brought that up way earlier.
I guess I better stop going out to my 40-acre ranch up in the mountains and taking down the beetle kill that will burn and destroy a lot of land that I chop up to run in my gasification truck that I use for bug out. Because if they find that, they're going to say, well, how are we going to tax you on that?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'd like to ramble on more and more about this stuff. Once you get me charged up, man, I don't want to stop. But we are running out of time here, and I want to thank you for being on the show, and I'll definitely would like to have you back on again sometime.
Well, Ed, it's been my honor to listen to your show for as long as I have, and I wanted to let you know the magazine that you edited and worked for. Their tremendous loss of a great man that knows what he does as a good patriot for his country and trying to be a self-reliant man. I enjoyed everything you've done, and I continue on to listen and support you in all your actions.
Well, thanks, Mike. I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me. And you know, I appreciate all the other folks out there who sent me their well wishes and emails and messages and whatnot and everything. But you know what? I'm not going anywhere, and, you know, sometimes you just got to move on. Sometimes you just got to do something different, you know, and actually I think it's better this way. You know, I'm reaching a hell of a lot more people with the radio show and the website than I was before, and what I really like about it is the sense of immediacy. You know, it's like I'm in it every day updating the website and, you know, and thinking about topics for the radio show and all that, and if I want to get stuff out there, if I want to get some information out there, then boom, I just put it out there. You know, and nobody has to wait for it, you know.
Well, thank you very much, Ed. From us that are out there that listen and do this stuff, like I said, I'm not an armchair survivalist or prepper. I do it. And I always tell, at the end of all of our meetings and what we do, remember to keep your head down and your powder dry. And do that, Ed. Keep your head down, keep your powder dry, because one day people are going to be saying, I listen to that guy and I practice it, and that's what's helping me make it.
Well, I certainly hope so. And, you know, I've got my own twist on that. You know, you say keep your head down and keep your powder dry. At the end of every show, I tell people keep your head up and keep on living free. You know, and by that I mean keep your head up and, you know, don't let anybody beat you down. You know, don't take any crap from anyone. But anyway, we're just about out of time, and we're going to have to sign off for now. I want to thank Michael Jordan for being on the show and sharing his expertise in beekeeping as well as his information on various and sundry other topics. And thank you all for listening. I'm glad you're all out there listening. Thanks for coming to the website and everything. And, you know, if you want to check it out, if you haven't been there yet, that's at survivalandbeyond.net. And you can get all kinds of downloads and e-books, survival guides, videos, also the news that you're not going to get from the mainstream information misinformation machine. And, yeah, come by and check us out. Sign up for our newsletter. We got a newsletter going every week. You get keep up to date with what's going on. So sign up. We've got a bunch of people on the list, and glad to have one more aboard. So for this installment of Survival and Beyond, have a little trouble wrapping it up here, folks, but we got to do it. And so until next week, keep your head up and keep on living free.